down. And so I was like, one, two.
You pass it?
Yeah, that's what they say you're supposed to do that, yes.
Hey, you guys have been violating all kinds of rules, so I just say go for it.
We're going to call to order the meeting of the Senate Committee on Education. Today is April 23rd, 2015, and we are honored to have two of our distinguished representatives in the same room with us. So with that, and knowing that they're here, we will start with Senate Bill 2186, House Bill 2186. They got to keep correcting me. House Bill 2186, we're going to open a public hearing, and I'm getting a lot of guff that I didn't have probable work session, but possible work session, but we don't, so it will go over. So Representative, it is nice to have you here. Do you want to do a short explanation, or will we? Yeah, let's go
a
short explanation of the bill.
Chair Roveland, members of the committee, House Bill 2186 provides that core teaching standards apply to public charter schools. This bill was voted out of the House Committee on Education with unanimous support. The bill has no prior subsequent referral, no amendments at this time, a minimal fiscal impact, and no revenue impact.
Well, good afternoon, Chair Roblin and committee. Thank you for holding this a hearing on House Bill 2186. For the record, I'm Betty Comp. I serve House District 22. When we write our legislation, we always think we have all the pieces of the puzzle put together, but it's like putting a jigsaw puzzle together. Often there's a piece that hides under the table, so you don't quite get everything. And in 2011, we passed Senate Bill 290, and there was not clarifying language about typifying that the bill would pertain to all teachers in the state. Charter schools were not included in the professional development that was stated in Senate Bill 290. So this bill is, and Oregon is now implementing great professional development, new teacher evaluations, and learning and growth and collaboration for continuous improvement. We definitely believe that well-prepared teachers make for the best teachers, and that House Bill 2186 makes sure that charter schools are included so that they can have that same professional development. And with that, I'm going to pass the baton to my good colleague, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Representative Comp. Chair Roveland, members of the committee, thank you. I'm Mark Johnson from Hood River, represent House District 52. And I think Representative Comp has teed it up adequately. There was a bit of an oversight back at the point in time we passed Senate Bill 290 back in 2011. Then you'll recall in 2012, the State Board actually wrote into place the actual core standards by which we now have our teacher evaluation program structured. And it was a bit of an oversight that I think charter schools weren't expressly spelled out. But I think you all would hopefully share my values that the most important most important person in a classroom is the teacher. Okay, it's all about a quality educator, and every student, I think, deserves to have a quality educator within his or her classroom. And the spirit and the intent, obviously, behind Senate Bill 290 is to ensure that teachers have access to rigorous and robust and informative evaluation processes, because if you'll think back to prior 2011, the system was dramatically different. Basically, teacher evaluation from between a principal or an administrator and a teacher, as you well know, Senator Roland, was basically kind of a pass-fail. You either were making adequate progress, doing well, or you were not. There wasn't anything that really informed the discussion so that teachers could understand perhaps where they needed to improve, or but from the flip side, where the administrator of the district might be able to provide more support to help that teacher advance. So this just ensures that in every public education, every public school, every teacher is going to have access to a system that will help inform his or her work to help them become the best they can be, and that our kids can have access to the best instruction possible. One other caveat or clarifying thing I need to point out is this is something that we ran into on the House side, is that core teaching standards have absolutely nothing to do with Common Core state standards. Just to make that clear, there's nothing to do with Common Core. It's simply about the core teaching standards, and there's really smart people behind us that can explain a little bit more about what that entails. So with that, we are happy to answer any questions, and would love to have your support.
And Mr. Chair, I'd like to add one other statement. When it comes to teacher evaluation, It's also very, very important that you acknowledge your teachers that are doing an exceptional job and allow them to mentor or help other teachers. I'll be very brief here with my short story, but my first 3 years of teaching, I was observed my first year once or twice, and then after that, I never had an evaluation whatsoever. And so then it was like, well, am I doing a good job or aren't I? And so it serves multiple purposes, and so a teacher evaluation is good for all of us and definitely good for our students.
Thank you very much. We have our number one person who likes to ask questions of you, wanting to ask questions. And so Senator Canope is going to have a question for you.
I'm pleased that he's going to ask Representative Johnson questions.
That's right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am going to ask Representative Johnson a question. Two of your colleagues in the House voted no on this bill. Do you happen to know what their concern was?
I think they, Senator Canope. I don't know exactly. I think I know who they were. They might have been still confused about the connection between Common Core and core standards, I believe. But in terms of any great angst about what we were proposing here, I don't believe that. And I'll just say a caveat, too. I think that some charter proponents have been concerned that this is a way to get into charter schools and begin to create or to have more, let's say, influence perhaps than they're comfortable with. But I would say that's not within the intent of what's proposed here at all. So I think that's probably it.
Okay.
But just one more follow-up, if I could. I think it's important to, again, point out, I think, what Senate Bill 290 has done across the state. And I'll point to your district in Ben Lapine, who is in the latter stages of being a class district. And because they, you know, you've had that collaborative relationship between labor and management now for, I think, about 4 years or so, they have agreed on a very robust, helpful evaluation process there that everybody's in agreement on labor and management about what it means and how it will be structured and what the outcomes mean and so forth. To the, this year, they actually have changed their salary schedules, maybe you're aware of, to where now incoming teachers can be advance in the salary schedule based on their evaluation process that they've lined out here. So it's incredibly exciting from the employee standpoint. A lot of new hires are much more excited about getting into a system like that where they're actually evaluated on and can advance based on merit rather than just simply longevity within a district. And it's a really exciting prospect, and via the class district process, we hope to have that in place in more districts across the state.
Any other questions? The only thing I would say, I know exactly what you meant, and I just want to clarify so no one gets, because I know Mr. Johnson, when you said the teacher's the most important person in the classroom, I think you and I both think it's the kids as well that are more important. But we really agree totally on the fact that that teacher has more influence than anybody else, that other than a parent, with those kids. So I didn't want someone to come back and because I know where you are with respect to kids. So,
well, and I wanted to thank the committee for your time and encourage your support.
Okay, thank you both. Any other questions? Thank you. So, next. Well, we have two legislators who are busy, so what we might do is open a couple of the other meetings and let them both come and give their testimony on their bills, and we'll come back to the other two on this bill. So with that, we're going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 3045, and I think Representative Hack, is he here yet? Oh, there you are. Why was I was thinking somebody else. Thank you. You can come on up, and we will also be opening Senate Bill.
House Bill.
I'm not going to get there for a while. 2939. There's your name. And so they're all open, and we'll have Representative come up. Come on up. And we can take care of it quickly.
Thank you, so, Chair Roblin and members of the committee, for the record. I'm Representative Jody Hack, and I represent House District 19. And you may want to actually get the background on this bill first before I speak to it.
Sure.
That might be helpful for you.
And we'll have a short explanation.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, House Bill 3045 removes the requirement that a school district transfer money to another school district for students who attend a public charter school in the school district but are residents of another district. It was voted out of the House Committee on Education with unanimous support. The bill has no prior subsequent referral, no amendments at this time, a minimal fiscal impact, and no revenue impact.
Thank you. So I'm actually here because we're hoping to have an amendment to you, and I was hoping it would be here today. And the amendment that I'm seeking to bring forward is that the dollars that are not going to be given out to the different school districts, there's a minimal amount of money that Mr. Williamson from Portland Public Schools, who brought this bill forward, was talking about the fact that it's very cumbersome for school districts to have to take these minimal amounts of money and send them back out to school districts where if there's a student that's in a charter and could be living in a district clear across town or across the state, they're having to send these small little minuscule amounts of money and these little checks all over the place. And it's difficult for districts to maintain that, and it's a lot of work for them, and it doesn't amount to a whole lot of money. So what I'm asking to do in an amendment is to say, agreed, that's a lot of work for districts, which is what this bill takes care of, but instead of that money going straight back to the district, let's just give it to the charter schools. It's not money that the districts were, that the home district was counting on. And so I'd like to see those dollars be given back to the charters, since even though it doesn't amount to a whole lot, you know, $60 here and $70 here was his analogy during his testimony to districts throughout the state. But if it goes back to the charter, it could mean internet for a charter school or something like that. So I would ask that you consider the amendment when you see it to take that burden off of the district that houses the charter. When they're writing their one check to the charter, they can just include it all in there. It's no more work for them, and it gives a little extra to the charter schools.
Any questions? Thank you very much.
Okay. Now, would you mind introduce the bill?
We'll introduce the bill,
okay.
Too.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, House Bill 2939 adjusts the salary calculation for substitute teachers in school districts that have a class schedule based on a four-day week. This bill was also voted out of the House Committee on Education with unanimous support. The bill has no prior subsequent referral, no amendments at this time. A fiscal impact has been issued, and the bill has no revenue impact.
Okay, thank you. For the record, I'm State Representative Margaret Doherty from House District 35, which is Tigard in Southwest Portland, and I'll be introducing this bill, and then we have somebody coming up later when you reopen it to talk about one of our substitute teachers. But nationally, 21 states, including Oregon, have school districts that operate on a four-day week, and usually these programs operate in smaller, more rural districts. And the earliest date of the policy implementation for substitute teachers was in the 1930s, and they were all five-day weeks. And now it's becoming more and more common in that we have 68 schools in Oregon that operate on a four-day week. Unfortunately, the calculation for the substitute teachers, which are set in statute, and it's usually the beginning teacher's salary, and it's based on usually an eight-hour day, a five-day week, that has not kept up with the four-day weeks. And so what we are doing is the current salary for substitutes is based on that. So what this bill does is it adjusts the relevant statutes so that the substitute teacher salaries for schools that use a four-day week will be adjusted and reflect the increased work those teachers are required to do. And the measure would take effect next year. But basically what it does, it changes the daily minimum multiplier from 1.125 to 1.115, and that would reflect the four-day week. One thing that is in the OLIS packet is a list of all the schools and how many hours the substitute teachers work in those four-day schools, yet they're getting paid like somebody who's working in a five-day school district. And so that's the introduction of the bill. We do have somebody later on to a substitute talk about it if you have any questions.
Any questions for our representative? Nope.
It also did, also came out of committee 9-0.
Okay. Thank you both.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
With that, we will go back to the hearing that we already opened on 2186, and we will call up Frank Capello and Michael Mann. I think I did that wrong, but. Yep. Representative Doherty.
Thank you, Senator Roble, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Frank Carapello. I'm the Vice President of Education Policy for the Chalkboard Project. Before joining Chalkboard Project, I have served as an assistant superintendent, school principal, and teacher in the Greater Albany and North Santiam school districts. I'm here today to testify in support of House Bill 2186. And with me, I have Michael Mann, a teacher from the Gresham Barlow School District, who will talk about his experiences with the effective evaluations that started under Senate Bill 290. As Representative Comp and Johnson covered it very well, the history of the bill and how we believe that it would make sense for all teachers in Oregon who are in public schools, both traditional and charter schools, to be evaluated under the same set of teacher standards and practices. So with that, I'll turn it over to Michael.
Thank you for the opportunity. My name is Michael Mann. I'm a teacher in the Gresham Barlow School District. I'm currently in my 25th year of teaching middle school language arts and social studies. I'm also a member of the Distinguished Educators Council with the Chalkboard Project. And a little bit of background on that, we are a group of we're called distinguished teachers, and I guess we are in some respects. All of us are National Board certified or Milken Award winners, State Teachers of the Year. And we meet on a fairly regular basis, tasked with one thing, to make Oregon a great place to teach. And so we work with the Chalkboard Project and advise them on initiatives, some of which you have heard and acted on. I'm speaking in support of the bill, and I want to talk a little bit about my own evaluation process. As I said, I've been teaching for 25 years, and I have been nominally evaluated in one way or another every year. I would say the last 2 years, those evaluations have actually been effective and substantive. Before that, as those of you who have been in education know, it's a pass. I never met a teacher that didn't pass. And the game is much different now. It's a sea change. And from my own personal experience, it has been great professional development for me for the last 2 years. The evaluation process now involves specific performance tasks that I am responsible for in my classroom, ways that my performance is measured in my actual classroom practice, the ways that my students perform, and it involves very substantive and very valuable meetings between me and my administrators where we have very valuable discussions about what I'm doing in my classroom, how I'm measuring that. They're very data-based. I would also say that under the new evaluation process, administrators are now evaluated based on my performance, and so they've got skin in the game in how well I'm doing in my classroom, and I have found that that has made for very supportive relationships with my administrators.
Thank you very much. Any questions for these two? Seeing none, I appreciate you being here. Thanks for taking a little bit of time to share with us, and congratulations for being a distinguished teacher.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other witnesses? Currently, we have nobody on the list, but if there is anybody that got excited and wants to run up and testify now, they can do so. Seeing none, we're going to close our public hearing on Senate Bill 2186. And we have House Bill 2186. We have House Bill 3045 open already. So we heard Representative Heck. So we have Darla Moisen. I didn't do that right, but we'll figure it out in a second. And David Williams. Did you want to come up, David? And I guess we have one other. Okay. Very good.
Clearly, you're not Dutch.
Yes. Well, actually, we found out recently we are, but it was in 1609, so it's been a while.
Yeah, that's completely my husband's fault. So I am Darla Musin. I am the executive director, which is a fancy name in Charter World,
basically is the principal of Savvy Island Academy. We are a K-8 charter school located just outside of Portland on Savvy Island. Our focus is place-based education, so letting kids have kind of experiential ways in which to learn. And so what's brought me here today out of my school is in March, I was at the House Bill 3151 public comment, and actually Mr. Williams was there. And this wasn't planned, by the way, but it works out perfectly. And he was talking a lot about that bill, and he was sharing kind of that frustration that you heard Representative Hack share about how, you know, there's all these small amounts of dollars, 2.5% here, 5% there, and that, you know, it took a lot of manpower to process, and really for them, just let them keep it. It wasn't, you know, it's not a big deal to PPS. And so it kind of made me think in charter world, money is very significant because you don't have much of it. It's taken me kind of a month to figure out how to put my finger or my head around that idea. And so I have been following House Bill 3045. And as Representative Hack said, it takes the money. So for us, for example, we're in Scappoose School District. I have lots of students that are from St. Helens, Columbia City, Warren, Hillsboro, Portland, Milwaukee. So the 20% that the district receives for those kids, 10% of that then goes back to St. Helens, Hillsboro, Portland, Milwaukee, Portland Public. And so what this bill does, and I'm not a big PowerPoint person, so I just made a little things to keep myself on track, is it made sense to me what he was saying. That does seem like a lot of work for small amounts of monies. But I thought to myself, you know, I kind of wonder what that would equal in my district and my kids, and what does that mean? And I loved when I started researching the bill, when you go on the legislative website, it has these words as how it describes it. It's, you know, it's monies that are left over. It's de minimis. I don't know if I said that right.
Minimis.
Which, that it's an administrative burden, that, you know, the transfer of money is really significant in time and management. And so I guess what I would... what I would ask, and Representative Bill kind of or Hack beat me to the punch today, is that I'm not opposed to that idea that it's a lot of work and that it probably isn't a lot of money. But if there was a way to write an amendment in which could lessen that amount of work for the sponsoring district, but yet share some of those dollars with the students in which those dollars were meant for. And so I started asking myself, you know, like, what do I agree with in this House bill? And what I would agree with is that, yes, it doesn't make any sense to send money to St. Helens or Milwaukee or Portland Public when they don't have any oversight responsibility for the charter school or those students. So, you know, they're not going to come here today and, like, pound their fists and say, hey, we want that money. I mean, they don't have a strong argument, you know. And then, you know, as we said, you know, transferring that money is back and forth. And also as the sponsoring district, they're currently providing oversight with the dollars in which they have, right? So it's not taking monies out of their budget. It's not causing a hardship on them. It's, in fact, it's decreasing the amount of work which they would need to do. And let's face it, we're all busy, right? Charter, non-charter, doesn't matter. Everyone's busy. So when I thought about this, like, what is the small amount? It's for some For our district, it's 20%, 80% split. For other districts, I talked to Vanessa Gray at the Forest Grove Community. They're a 15-85 because they've been able to negotiate that. That makes the numbers even more wonky, right? When you're sending back 50% of 15% at 7.5%. And so when I'm trying to wrap my head around this, I guess what I'm saying is I understand how it doesn't belong or shouldn't belong or go back to the resident district. And I also can see why it makes sense that it shouldn't remain with the sponsoring district if they're doing less work and they haven't needed it to begin with. So what I'm arguing, or I guess what I'm asking you to kind of think about is that they have a system, right? It's a lot of work to do this. But couldn't you take that similar system and use it to send those dollars back to the charter school? I was thinking about our situation, and each month, at the beginning of the month, we have to send a report to our sponsoring district, and it says how many in-district students we have, how many out-of-district students. Of those out-of-district students, where do they come from? So is it Portland? Is it Hillsborough? Is it? So we do that work every month and send it to the district. So that, at least in our situation, takes even more of the burden off of the sponsoring school district, which for me, I can understand how that helps in the process. It's coming one place, it's one check, it's one, in fact, it's electronic now, right? We don't write checks anymore, but that electronic transfer. And so I started running the numbers, and I'm very like linear thinker, so spreadsheet is how I figured it out. And so I brought some for you as well. But just to kind of take you through this, for us in our situation, we have two kindergartners that are out of district and 58 first through eighth graders. So a total of 60 kids out of 211. And that's a pretty significant number of out of district kids. And we rely on them. We couldn't survive without out-of-district ADM dollars or students. And so when you go through and you figure out, well, kindergartner is only worth half, and then you take 20% of that half, and you go through the formula, what you come down to is got the 20% is $81,172. The 10% that is retained by our district is $40,000. 586, and the 10% that goes back is 40,586. That's of those 60 students, right? So trying to keep that in perspective and say, like, well, what does that really look like? If you follow it down through the rest of our ADM, so the other 151 students, and the weights that you get for things like poverty and ESL and remote school of 39. So when you look big dollars, you're talking 20%. So for us, the 20% that goes away is $327,916. Of that, 40,000 of it is going back outside of the sponsoring district or the charter school. And so I know that you think like 40,000 isn't a big deal. And so I thought, well, what is it for others? So I called Kohlberg, and for them, it's $26,140. For Forest Grove Community School, which we partner with a lot, it's $7,739. So I know that those aren't big numbers to you, but when I try to put it in perspective for us, that's $1.11 a kid per day. For Kohlberg, that's 20 people's cable bill for a year. For Forest Grove, you know, if you each got a mocha each day, that would be the money. So when you hear Portland, when I hear Portland Public or the bigger school districts say, like, we don't want to mess with a mocha a day, dollars and cents. But for a charter school that is functioning on 80%, and our budget is, you know, $1.5 million, that's 2.6% of our budget. So I wanted you to see some of the things that we could do specifically for our out-of-district kids with that amount of money. when kids come from Southeast Portland over Milwaukee, or they come from Columbia City, that's a choice, and that's a burden to make that commute. We could run. I get parents say, "Gosh, could we just get a bus to North Portland, or could we just get a bus to St. Helens? If I could get my kid there, then they could come to your school." But that's transportation dollars. Currently, I spend $43,000 on transportation just with what we have. So, you know, with some extra dollars, I could do that. I could offer those things for our out-of-district kids. For the fact that we are on an island, there's no fiber on our island. CenturyLink has the market. All we can do are T1s. Six of them, to be exact, which gets us 9 meg, which is a step above dial-up. But for that, it costs us $3,600 a month. So for us to have 9 meg of internet, it's $43,200. That $40,000, those MOCAs, those cable bills, for us, that would pay for our kids to have internet. Or maybe even we could buy a few more T1s, and we wouldn't have to test one class at a time on the Smarter Balance. We started Smarter Balance before March, and we will run that all the way until the last week of June because of our internet issues. You know, it could be transportation. It could be food. That's how much I spend for food for our lunch, so we can offer free and reduced. It could be a custodian. We didn't have that for the first 2 years, and now we have a part-time person with that. For Kohlberg, you know, that's a half-time ELL teacher. You know, $23,000, that's PGE and Northwest put together for us for a year. For $7,000, That's what we have to spend on copiers, printers, and ink for the year. I looked, and that's how much we spent last year in custodial, so like toilet paper, paper towels, soap, those kinds of things last year for our school. So those things are what I consider pretty basic and necessity. They're not, you know, we're not going out and putting a smartphone in every single kid's hand for those dollars. So, I know that it doesn't seem like a lot, but it could make a big difference for charter schools and for the students that are at those charter schools. And, you know, when I went through the budgets, $40,586 for SCAPHOOS, that's 0.19% of their budget. That's how much revenue it would give them. I mean, I had to look at the calculator to make sure I had that right. I looked at Eugene's. It's, you know, 26,000 out of 159 million. I had to call them because I'm like, is that really your budget? Is 0.01%. For Forest Grove, 7,000 out of 16 million, it's 0.04%. So, you know, it could make a big difference for us. It's 2.6% of our budget. I know that I'm asking you to do a lot of work doing an amendment. I don't even know how to do that or how that would happen. But I would ask that you please do that for these dollars. It's really important to the kids at the charter schools. And I think, you know, I appreciate the honesty of the districts when they say, like, it's a lot of work. It's really not worth it to us. The districts who've been receiving it, who probably haven't had the merit of keeping it, to put a bill forward like this. But I guess I would ask that you take it one step further and write an amendment to the bill that takes what some people consider insignificant and makes it significant for a lot of kids that are in our state.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. David Williams, representing Portland Public Schools. Thank you. I sure wish I'd known about this amendment before today, but nonetheless, it is what it is. I do want to remind us this is a bill that came out of the House Committee 9-0, passed the floor of the House 59-0 with one excused. In the vein of no good deed goes unpunished, or rather there is no such thing as a technical bill in the legislative session, especially dealing with charter schools, this was our attempt at a fairly technical piece of legislation for you all. So let's take it back to the bill itself. Right now, students who attend a charter school in a school district that are not physically residents of that school district, the school district is required to return 50% of the district-retained portion of the ADM back to the resident school district. It is a fairly sort of hassle type of scenario for your district, depending on where you're at. For Portland Public Schools, we require districts to enter into a contract with the school district for the transfer of the funds. It ends up being about $50,000 give and take for the school district. Now, I do want to be clear, we take every single dollar that we have in our system very, very seriously. And while my overall numbers are big, we are about $500 million annual operating budget. We do educate 50,000 students in Portland Public Schools, and we take that obligation very seriously. You also know from testimony on Senate Bill 819 that we actually spend more on services and oversight to charter schools than we retain in the portion that we retain to the school district. So every dollar that goes added to that is a dollar out of the traditional funding for our schools in the system as well. We could go on and on about the current state of funding in education. I think that's a debate we've had down the hall in Ways and Means, and I think it's a debate we're happy to have. If you have kids in schools, you know that on day one, or at least in the summer, you're getting a list of supplies that you're being asked to bring with your child to school, including things like wet wipes and pencils and pens and paper towels and napkins. I don't drink mochas. I drink black coffee. We are frugal in every aspect in the school system. Charter schools are no exclusion to that, but the system is how it is. Our intent here is merely to deal with the transfer of funds back and forth between traditional between school districts by money retained by those school districts by statutory authority. We're not looking to at all get into the conversation about the level of funding for actual charter schools. That, again, you addressed in Senate Bill 819, and that conversation will continue in other committees. So we really were looking for a technical piece of legislation here. The other genesis of this came out of a group that we have been working with of what we call charter authorizers. So these are school districts that have charter schools in their district. A group of folks, we've been sort of reviewing the law during the interim, looking at places for improvement. We have some bigger policy initiatives that we've brought. Some may or may not be surviving. And we have a couple of technicals. You have another sort of technical bill, we think, on your docket today, which we'll talk about as well. And that's really what we were looking for, is some cleanup to the system to make it operate more smoothly. We certainly don't want to go about creating an incentive for charter schools to be more mindful of recruiting out-of-district kids to try to get that extra half rate. We don't want to have to even create a system where I even have to track whether it's a resident kid or non-resident kid in that charter school. I know the amount I pass through, and that's all that exists. We don't have to do any additional services there. It's also in our system, which is a very big system statewide in education, there are those areas of statute that maybe not everybody pays the closest of attention to. And this particular piece of the charter school law is a piece that happens somewhere and it doesn't happen in other places. So I don't know specifically if SCAPOOS is actually sending me the money for Portland Public Schools kids that are at the Savvy Island Charter School. Likewise, I don't know if they're doing that for, say, the Gresham Webb Academy or the Baker Webb Academy or wherever they happen to be. All I know is that I have to find a way to get the money of kids that are in my system out to those districts, and they got to find a way to get it to us. And rather than create this money passing in the night, it's all money that's being spent in the system. This isn't money that's sitting in some checking account unused. We want to just kind of leave it where it is and make it a much more efficient system. That's really what this is about. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions? I guess my thing is, and I just want to paraphrase what I just heard from Mr. Williams. Right now, you're sending money out to districts that kids are in these charter schools. And other districts are sending you money because you have charter schools in your district. And basically you're saying, in a lot of places, this is just passing money. It's a draw. I mean,
correct.
I have kids that are going out. I have kids that are coming in. So why do we have to make this process? We'll just leave it in the hands of the school district. Take this out. And that's what the original bill said.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Makes some sense. And you're saying if they haven't been using it now, which is partially true, I mean, it's been going back and forth, so it's hard to know if it's been used or not. But and you're saying, instead of saying it there, the home district can just send it down. It won't make any more difference for them. The question is chancing it. And I want to do that. I do want to commend you in particular for understanding your budget. Having been a high school principal, I will tell you it's always been difficult to get citizens who aren't on the budget committee to actually understand a budget and all the things that they're going through and how hard and how every penny is spent. And so then you go in these deals to try to explain to people. If nothing else, charter school people like you who have actually had to figure out a budget understand that better than most of the other people, and that's a positive for the state of Oregon, in my opinion, because everybody knows everybody's having a hard time making it with the money we're giving, and they are working really hard in those budget committees and those budgets to get it all in the right place. So I appreciate your knowledge. I appreciate the fact that you put that all together and took the time. And we knew, we had just heard that there were possible amendments to a couple of these bills. That's why we don't have work sessions the first time, because we want to hear what's out there. We will look at that. But I understand both, and we'll talk to our committee members and see where we go. But thank you. And I did hear from the senator that you've already dropped the amendment. I mean, you're just having it written. Okay. Any other questions of any of these people? Thank you very much. There's no one else unless the conversation created the opportunity for someone to think they wanted to come up and talk about House Bill 3045. I see no one jumping to their feet, so we will close the public hearing on 3025. And we will open a public – it's already open. So we will close the public hearing on 3025 if I haven't already done that, and twice anyway. And now we will continue the public hearing on 2939. We will invite up Elizabeth. They do this to me all the day. Oh, I'll let you pronounce your last name better. You have very nice handwriting, though, so thank you for that.
I'm Elizabeth LaRoque.
I can't use that as an excuse, but –
And I'm here on behalf of Oregon's Substitute Teachers. I am the president of Oregon Substitute
Could
Teachers Association.
Put your name again, too. Just
Elizabeth LaRoque.
LaRoque.
Two
okay.
syllables, eight letters. My first lesson in the class is phonetics.
That's right.
I'm fully credentialed. I have a standard teacher's license that has more than one credential on a master standard certificate. I'm proud to be a professional substitute teacher in Oregon, and I appreciate the opportunity to come here and speak before the Senate. This is a great honor. It's not my first time at the Capitol or my first time to address the Senate, but I am always grateful for that opportunity. I want to thank the House for their 100% acceptance of our bill, and this has not been an easy road. So that's a great hurdle for us to have overcome. This is not the first time our bill has come before the legislature. The last time we were here, there was a misunderstanding about the fact that this is not a request for any additional money. This is money that exists in the districts. It's distributed by the school districts in the payroll. All we've been asking is that teachers who are working more hours be paid for those hours. It has to be calculated accordingly because there's one day fewer in the school district and those hours are distributed among the remaining 4 days. Also, this is a time when teachers are being expected to do more, even teachers on call. I say even teachers on call because that's how we've been acknowledged as even teachers. We are teachers. We're professionals. We're proud to be there. We are there to continue the education of children in our schools. We're there to keep the gap closed on their ability to be in the classroom and receive their education. With that in mind, again, I thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much. So is there anyone else that would like to speak to this bill? Seeing no one, we will close our hearing on House Bill 2939A. We will open a public hearing on House Bill 3044A. I have a short explanation.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, House Bill 3044A allows a public charter school to use real property in another school district if the school provides written notice of the use to the sponsor and the district. This bill was voted out of the House Committee on Education with unanimous support of those present. The bill has no prior subsequent referral, no amendments at this time, a minimal fiscal impact, and no revenue impact.
Very good. So with that, David Williams.
It's your day.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. David Williams with Portland Public Schools. This is another bill coming from the group of charter authorizers that we've been working with. So there is current statute that requires if you are a traditional school district and you want to open a building outside of the boundaries of your school district, you're required to obtain the permission of said school district that you want to open the building. And there's actually an example of this. We actually have the Riverdale High School located inside the boundaries of Portland Public Schools, and they have our permission to operate in that facility. We thought that this made a lot of sense to extend this same requirement to charter schools. There are instances where we know of charter schools seeking to open facilities outside or currently operating facilities outside of the boundaries of their sponsoring school district, some with or without the knowledge of the school district in which they're located. We don't think it's totally appropriate for this to take place. The original bill required the same level of permission as school district to school district. What we got amended in the House committee was to change that to a notification requirement where the charter school is required to notify both the sponsoring school district as well as the school district in which they are hoping to own and operate a facility. Obviously, the use case of this is primarily around virtual charter schools and their desire to open and operate drop-in centers or testing sites or any other sort of facility where they may have kids. And that really was our intent, is any building that may have kids in it, if they want to open up a server farm or a call center, that's not really of our concern. This is really about buildings that'll have kids in it. For us, when we have buildings inside Portland Public Schools, we want our community to know that it's a building we know about. They're going to look at a building that looks like a school and operates like a school and think it's a PPS building. And if we're not even aware that it's operating, it puts us at a bit of an unfair spot when people and parents and community members may start to complain and have problems with that. We'd like to know where they're operating and what they're doing, and perhaps even work with them to find better suitable facilities or locations that may work better. I think there's a great example of this that came up in the House committee where the Baker Webb Academy is operating a facility in David Douglas where they went to the school district. Obviously, David Douglas is not their sponsoring district. Baker City School District is. But David Douglas said, hey, there's a spot here. This would be great for you to operate. You can serve some kids because they already had kids from the metro area, and it was a spot for them to operate. And I think they have a really great relationship there with David Douglas. We would like to see that same thing happen if you're desiring to open a facility outside of your sponsoring school district. That's what you have before you today.
Good. Any questions? Okay. I appreciate the explanation. I will tell you that. Is there anyone else that would like to speak to Senate House Bill 3044A? Seeing.
I did. Well, with a little stutter.
Just a bit.
I'm getting better. We're going to close that public hearing. We're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2405. We'll have a short explanation.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, House Bill 2405 allows the Department of Education to solicit and accept gifts, grants, donations, and other monies from public and private sources for the state school fund. This bill was voted out of the House Committee on Education with unanimous support of those present. The bill has no prior subsequent referral, no amendments at this time, a minimal fiscal impact, and a revenue impact has been issued.
Very good. So, Jan McCollum.
You made her wait all this time, Dr.
She stays all the time anyway. She's always here. I appreciate that diligence that she has to making sure that we don't do something to her without her knowledge. Thank you, Jan.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, Jan McComb with the Oregon Department of Education. House Bill 2405 is a purely housekeeping bill. I know you hear that before. When the department was looking at what agency bills to introduce last summer, our chief financial officer, Sue McClashen, some of you might know, was looking at our state school fund subaccounts and looking to see if they could be streamlined or made more efficient. We met with legislative counsel and legislative fiscal and legislative revenue last summer, and we talked it through. And we decided the only thing that really needed to be changed was to more explicitly say in the statute that we could accept donations for the state school fund. So that is why this bill is here before you now.
Did you want to solicit before or after? We'll have to wait till the bill, I guess, right? Yeah, okay, that's good. I actually appreciate that because there have been a lot of situations where people have wanted to do it. I always thought we could, so I appreciate the fact that they're looking at it close enough that came up with the idea that we better make it explicit. So any questions for Jen? Seeing none?
I was trying really hard, but no.
Thank you, Jen. Again, to make sure that I am consistent, is there anyone else that would like to come forward to talk about House Bill 2405? Seeing none, we will close our public hearing on 2405. That concludes this group. We will get them up for work sessions in the near future. I will check with Representative Hack and see how that's coming with respect to the other bill and talk to members about where we're at with respect to that. So with that, our Senate Education Committee is adjourned.